Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. The majority of podcasts I feature on The Spot are pretty new. With the boom in podcasting over the past 2 years, there's so much to choose from. But with all the new content floating around my earbuds lately, I'm craving to hear something older, something produced before the iPod or RSS feeds were even invented. So over the past few months, I've been on an obsessive pursuit to discover stories I've never heard from the archives of some of the first pioneers of audio documentary. On today's show, we'll hear stories from two masters of the audio documentary medium, starting with Studs Terkel. A longtime and well-celebrated radio personality and interviewer who was based at WFMT in Chicago. Since his death in 2008, WFMT has been mining through interviews from Studs' archives and releasing them in curated episodes. One of my favorites was released in April 2015 in honor of National Poetry Month, when the team at WFMT paired up with the Poetry Foundation.
We real cool, we left school, we lurk late, we strike straight, we sing sin, we thin gin, we jazz June, we die soon.
Three times I laid the kingly wig on him, and thrice did he put it down. Was this the move of a greedy hipster?
Well, that's certainly the eloquence of Willie the Shake here.
You know why they call him Willie the Shake?
Why?
Because he shook everybody.
Kerouac said, well, this then would be a Beat Generation, let's say. Everybody's beat, everybody's sort of worn down to a point where they'll be able to receive God.
Do you feel defeated? Forgetting the label beat itself.
No. I've so far have reached God, I think, and I'm going to go beyond it now.
What is there beyond God?
Ah, that's it, and I'm going to find it.
In celebration of National Poetry Month, this is Studs Terkel in conversation with American poets, a series of short programs drawn from the Studs Terkel Radio Archive, a collection of more than 7,000 programs from his daily radio show that aired on WFMT in Chicago. You just heard excerpts from talks with Gwendolyn Brooks, the incomparable Lord Buckley on Shakespeare, and the beat poets Peter Orlovsky, Allen Ginsberg, and Gregory Corso. I'm Robert Polito, president of the Poetry Foundation. Today we'll experience how poetry can perform the uncanny task of channeling the voices of other people. First we'll hear Elma Stuckey, Tennessee-born, Chicago-based poet and performer, whose poetry summons up a multitude of voices from America's past, above all the experiences of slavery. Stuckey gained recognition as a poet rather late in life, in part thanks to appearing on Terkel's radio show. She published her first book, The Big Gate, in 1976 at the age of 69. She was a Chicago school teacher and a supervisor in the Illinois Department of Labor. This conversation was originally broadcast in 1961.
Hey, some folks can live and others die. Some folks like cake and others pie. And there's a low for every high. And there's a far for every nigh. Some time I often wonder why. Well, there's a this, well, there's a that. Well, there's a tit, well, there's a tat. Some folks can sit and others sat. You got to spit before you've spat. If that ain't true, I'll eat my hat. Well, there's a crisp, well, there's a cross. Something found with something lost. Some ride a mule, some ride a horse. A rolling stone don't catch no moss. Some things free, others cost. You work for me, that make me buzz. Well, now the land is dry and the river's wet. Some babies cry and others fret. Some folks press pine. Others sweat. I feel the wind, ain't seen it yet. Just how silly can I get? Some folks got hair. Some wears a wig. Some dance the waltz. Some dance the jig. Some things zag. Some things zig. Some get it easy. Others have to dig. I got my cow. You got your pig. Well, now some folks get in and others wait. Some don't eat much and some lick the plate. And some folks is early, others late. You go through the crack and I find the gate. You call it luck, I call it fate. Well, now, there's a smile for every frown. If I'm a fool, you gotta be a clown. If this is up, well, that's gotta be down. If this is square, well, that's gotta be round. Some folks swim, other folks drown. I know it's how crazy all that sound.
This then is rigmarole. It's called rigmarole, and it's done in dialect. And our artist in this instance, Elma Stuckey, who lives in Chicago. Elma, suppose you tell us a bit about this kind of poetry that you wrote in dialect. You live in the North now.
Here. Yes, I do. But I was born and reared in Memphis, Tennessee. The way I became acquainted with the dialect, there was an old midwife named Rachel Wilson that lived close to us. And she used to visit our home and sit around. My mother was the mother of 11 children. And they always used the doctor to deliver the baby. But Miss Wilson always would come and sit around when my mother was pregnant, which seemed to me now most of the time, hoping that she would get a chance to, as she called it, catch the baby. Well, we weren't allowed in the room when she would come because she did a lot of talk about slavery time, and they didn't want us exposed to it at that time.
She was an ex-slave herself.
Yes, she was. She was mulatto.
Was it her dialect that you are simulating
yes,
so well?
Yes, that's exactly the way I learned the words.
She talked.
I find that if you use the dialect in the way that I have
that's
used
right.
it, it tells a story, and it's comical, and sometimes there's a double play on
of
words.
Course.
To understand the dialect and get
yes.
the real meaning, you really have to hear it spoken.
Yes. A question arises. As you do dialect, it is so rich. This is not a Deep South dialect, is it? I suppose it is.
It is.
And
I
yet,
tell you...
And yet it's Memphis, you see.
The way I
yes.
understand it is the Negro dialect was the Negro, African Negro's inability to really speak the English language when he was first brought over. And, of course, he had to catch as catch can, so to speak. And I think it's something that the Negro need not be ashamed of. And I think it's really a part of our cultural background. In fact, I think it should be preserved.
You just heard Studs Terkel in conversation with poet Elma Stuckey. From the earliest epic poets some millennia ago, right up to the present, poets come pretty naturally to the news. Ezra Pound once defined literature, in fact, as news that stays news. And William Carlos Williams famously wrote, "It is difficult to get the news from poems, yet men die miserably every day for lack of what is found there." And Studs Terkel, in his conversations with poets, continually reminds us that the news is all around us and that poems, whether difficult or not, don't lack it.
In these times of coolness and blandness and I couldn't care less-ism, it's refreshing to hear a voice that's clear, a voice that speaks out on behalf of definite aesthetic standards. Such a voice as that of John Chardy. This is from an extract from a speech you
yes.
offered. You speak of literature itself serving the purpose of enriching our lives. We're so accustomed to using it for another purpose.
The fundamental thing that literature does, that all the arts do, is to save voices from the experience of the race on this planet, and you have to hear those best voices. You have to open your imagination to Job asking his question, and when you have really heard that question ringing, you know the difference between a great question and a lesser one. An example that comes to my mind, when I was a kid, my uncle used to have a tremendous collection of those scratchy old orthophonic Caruso recordings. And especially on rainy days, but all the time, I had a passion for Caruso. But when you heard this voice, you not only heard the songs being sung, you suffered an expansion of your imagination. You discovered how well it was possible to sing these songs. In the first place, you'd think, just in the animal quality of the singing, Caruso would hit a high note and you'd say, this is as much as the human voice can do. You couldn't ask more of the human voice. And then he'd be beyond that. He'd exceed the expectation. Textbook prose, if that's the word for it, states things. We're told them cold. For example, in a geography book, it might say things about Chicago. Chicago is the great port of the Great Lakes. A certain number of railroads come into Chicago. A certain number of animals come into the slaughterhouses, the principal manufactories, and so forth. You see, one is not required to take any attitude toward this. These are ideas. But what's the difference between these stated ideas about Chicago and the experience of Chicago? As one comes here to live. Well, you see, poetry, in a sense, takes you into an idea to live. It doesn't just tell you about it.
Says Algren would write about Chicago.
Yes, this is the experience of the place. Well, poetry does not deal in ideas. It deals in the experience of ideas. It's felt thought. Not thought. It's felt thought.
That was Studs Terkel in conversation with John Chardy. Just as Elma Stuckey found the news in the stories and cadences of former slaves, New Jersey-born poet John Chardy channeled Dante in his famous translation, other artists, and in the case of this poem that follows, his father.
Sunday by Sunday, he took the train to his woods and walked under the trees to leave his print in his own land, a patron of seasons. I have done nothing as perfect as my father's Sunday on his useless lots. Gardens he dreamed from briar tangle, and the swampy back slope of his ridge rose over him more flowering than Brazil. Maples transformed to figs, and briar to blood-blue grapes in his look around, when he sat on a stone with his wine jug and cheese beside him, his collar and coat on a branch, his shirt open, his derby back on his head like a standing turtle. A big man he was. When he sang Celeste Aida, the woods filled as if a breeze was swelling through them. When he stopped, I thought I could hear the sound still moving. Well, I have lied. Not so much lied as dreamed it. I was three when he died. It was someone else. My sister went with him under the trees. But if it was her memory then, it became mine so long since, I will own nothing on it, having dreamed it from all the nights I was growing, the wet pants man of the family. I have done nothing as perfect as I have dreamed him from old wives' tales and the running of my blood. God knows what queer long darks I had no eyes for, followed his stairwell weeks to his Sunday breezeways. But I will swear the world is not well made that rips such gardens from the weak, or I should have walked a saint's way to the cross and nail by nail hymned out my blood to glory for one good reason.
I've played this at least 20 times, and every time I'm moved as though I heard it for the first time.
Thank you so much.
Is this out of memory? You say you were 3 years
kind
old.
Kind of confused memory, yeah. I mean, always the complicated thing, you see. I was the only son of an Italian family, the only man left in the family. Oh, all the relatives used to say, you know, you look like your father. This was my identity. This was my point for being in the family. How could I have looked like him at three? I couldn't have remembered the thing, actually. That's why I say I lied. I was three when it happened. I couldn't have remembered it, but it wasn't so much a lie as having dreamed it. I was given this to think about all the time I was growing up. And I knew where the thing was, and I seemed to remember having been in this place in Wilmington with him. Actually, I suspect what had happened is that I had taken my later memories and read them into an invented memory of him. It is a strange notion. At times I thought maybe I was my father. I had to take his place.
That was Studs Terkel in conversation with John Chiardi. Whether the subject is the legacy of slavery or the complications within an individual Italian family, one of the most exciting aspects of being a poet is the ability to speak in someone else's voice. You can tell your own story as if it were someone else's, and someone else's story as if it were your own. And I think this empathy, this quality of human sympathy, inevitably enlarges you as a person. I'm struck also that both Chardy and Stuckey view themselves as links in a chain, whether that's a chain of history or a chain of poetry.
Oh,
I'm Robert Polito, president of the Poetry Foundation. You've been listening to Studs Terkel in conversation with American poets. The Studs Terkel Radio Archive is managed by the WFMT Radio Network and the Chicago History Museum. It contains more than 7,500 interviews and will soon start to be accessible to the public. Take it easy, but take it at studsterkel.org. The producers are Tony Macaluso and Sarah Murphy. The executive producer is Steve Robinson. This is the WFMT Radio Network, Chicago.
To The Spot, KALW's weekly showcase of the best stories made by indie radio producers and podcasts. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. As National Poetry Month kicks off, I thought it'd be fitting to pair that last piece with a short documentary that follows a group of poets as they get to know strangers who haunt their neighborhood in New Orleans. Produced back in 2004 by Larry Massett, an award-winning radio producer who's been working in public radio since its beginnings. In this short doc, we meet a hot dog vendor, a barkeep, and a burlesque dancer who are all pulled, unbeknownst to them, into a poetry class led by author and poet Andre Cădrescu.
It's a rainy Saturday afternoon in Jackson Square. Our poetry combine, Colleen Fava, Megan Volpert, Robert Bloom, and myself, are about to interview a lucky dog man. There are lots of lucky dog men in New Orleans, selling this fast food from carts shaped like humongous hot dogs. It turns out this particular dog man is named Woody La Chapelle.
I'm kind of a person that likes being out in the world and dealing with people all day long, so it's kind of a fun job for me.
But you've seen some wild stuff in the square.
Yeah, more than I really want to see sometimes.
So, hey, this is your chance to ask the lucky dog men here a question. So.
Why did you come to New Orleans in the first place?
Change of pace. I've lived most of my life in San Francisco, parts of California, and this is very similar to San Francisco.
It's all going smoothly until someone mentions poetry. What do you know? Woody writes songs and poems. He just happens to have one stashed in the lucky dog cart under the condiments shelf.
It's called Cookin'. And did you want me to read it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually a song lyric, but I won't sing it. It's red beans on the back stove, Mama grew some rice. Now she cleaned and cooked it, be tasting very nice. Biscuits in the oven, crawfish in the pan, Mama knows how to feed a working man. Big spoon on the table, room to lose his belt. Give him a big slice of pie.
Let's face it, everyone in New Orleans is a poet. There may be something in the thick enough to drink air, or the story-saturated Mississippi water, or maybe the lucky dogs. But the epicenter of poetic activity in this city is quite specific. It's a bar in the French Quarter called The Gold Mine. The owner, Dave Brinks, is a poet, born and raised in the Quarter. The bar, which has been in his family for generations, is really a school for poetry, known as the New Orleans School for the Imagination. The Gold Mine is where you come to hear poems, read poems, meet other poets, and learn from Dave.
Before the Gold Mine, it was called Whiskey River, and then before that, it was called Shaky Jake's, and then before that, it was called Frenchman's Creek,
Whiskey River, Shaky Jake's.
Frenchman Street.
Frenchman Street.
Jeremiah's. The Hidden Door. I always had the fortune of growing up around a lot of nefarious characters in the quarter, and just being a kid, I guess I was always hopeful that most people were like that. And then the bikers and the terrific ladies of the night. There was a woman named Dauphine Kathy. Actually, her phone was where the popcorn machine is now, and that's where she used to take her calls.
Dave tells the students they should trust their dreams. Dreams are the source of poetry. To prove it, he tells us one of his dreams.
He goes, now let's go sit in this tree. And this tree was a tree that I always sat in when I was a kid, when I didn't feel like being around other people. And so we went and sat up in this tree. And he says, now I'm going to give you this formula, which is the year in which you'll live and the year in which you'll die. And he gave me this formula, and it was something like equinox divided by cucumber equals the number. And I did it immediately. I did it on him. And it came out to be the year that he had died. And he said, no. You wouldn't want to do that on yourself, because that's too scary. He says, but you would want to do it on the people that you love, and you want to make sure that you spend time with while they're still around.
The poetry combine is feeling a bit overwhelmed after the seance at the gold mine, but there is still more to come. We have scheduled an interview with Gio, the queen of New Orleans burlesque.
Satire is making fun of people who are smarter than me. Irony is making fun of people who are richer than me. Burlesque is making fun of people who are smarter and richer than me while taking my clothes off.
Gio is, of course, a poet. And she has a bachelor's degree in industrial design, a master's degree in counseling, and she is president of her neighborhood citizens association. In other words, she is a model citizen of New Orleans, who happens to have invented an aggressively postmodern style of striptease.
This burlesque revival, or neo-burlesque movement, is mostly about the delicate sensibilities of the tease, a skin I can slip back into when I choose, but I would so much rather be in your face, sometimes on your face, so you can guess my weight, of course.
At one point, Gio calmly disrobes in order to display a flame-colored tattoo decorating an anatomical region that these poetry students have never seen before, at least not in public. They are totally speechless. But Gio is not a bit speechless.
Every woman's body is a dark secret place where you and I came from. Paglia says, this is the meaning of striptease, a sacred dance of pagan origins, a hazardous sphere of primitive power. I don't procreate, I create and I recreate, I sublimate, and I've been unabashedly spoiled by receiving validation in this manner.
The next morning, we get together at a French Quarter cafe to unveil our work. The poems we have somehow managed to write overnight about the people we met yesterday. Here is Megan's take on Woody the Lucky Dog Man.
In the pouring rain, in 100 copyrighted song lyrics, in 17 self-published books, in the Lucky Hot Dog Man, in the cheapest of covers, in the priceless book, in the humble, a lesson.
And Colleen.
Woody is a lucky dog man in Jackson Square. 17 books of poetry, 100 copyrighted songs, a previous incarnation in a metal punk rock band, and time on the streets. Now he stands in downpours, giving the public what they need. Mystery meat on a bun and lyrics beneath the ketchup.
Well, we became more communal than I even thought. There is a giant prejudice about poetry, and it's been there for a long time, that poets are lone creatures who, you know, suffer in privately in their with their typewriters and their pens, you know, and this is a way to actually erase that terrible idea and do something new. As Ezra Pound said, make it new, and I think this is definitely a way to make it new.
Thank you.
That was produced in 2004 by Larry Massett, senior producer at NPR's Hearing Voices. Though Hearing Voices is on hiatus, they have over 140 hours of stories that I highly recommend you get lost in at hearingvoices.com. That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. Look under the Programs tab. I want to know about the podcasts you regularly listen to. Send your suggestions in an email to thespot@kalw.org. Also, throughout April, KALW will celebrate National Poetry Month by bringing back our Radio Poets series, featuring a new poem each day of the month from students here in San Francisco. Keep your ears peeled. And tune in next Thursday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on KALW, San Francisco.